You're listening to The John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor.
Good morning, good evening, whenever, wherever you may be listening. I'm John Vogel, and welcome into The John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. So if that is something that you want to do, that is start your own podcast, go to anchor.fm, get all the info. We'll have more details about that within this show. So, happy Monday. I hope you all had a great weekend. I did almost nothing this weekend, so it was a great weekend. It's good to get back. It's kind of get back into the thing, the rhythm of things, get back into the game, so to speak. Get back to going to work, get back to talking about this and football and stuff. So, let's get into it, because there was a good bit that happened this weekend that we can talk about on this show. So, first off, the big news, clearly, that we need to talk about here is Jamal Adams has been traded from the New York Jets to the Seattle Seahawks for 2 first-round picks, a 3rd round this upcoming draft, and I believe there was a player involved, a safety to replace Adams, Bradley McDougal. This is a big trade. So we've talked briefly about Jamal Adams on this show. Not really something that we covered a lot of. We didn't know if he was actually going to get a trade. We didn't know, but we knew that he was asking and that he was becoming more and more straightforward with his demands for a trade. And so that's kind of what happened here finally is they got a really good offer. I mean, 2 first rounds, a 3rd round, and a safety with 1 year left on his contract. Yeah, you can't beat that. That's a really good deal. And so they took it, naturally. So the Jets now have 2 first round picks in this upcoming draft, the Seahawks and their own. And they will have 2 first-round picks a year after that. So, let's kind of look into this a little bit, see what caused this. So, obviously, the first issue that's going on with the Jets is their head coach. And their head coach is Adam Gase. Gase was able to rise to a head coaching position in the NFL because of his work as the offensive coordinator for Denver. That's back in the days when Peyton Manning is the quarterback at Denver. I'm not entirely sure why people thought he was entirely successful, especially with Peyton's last year. Peyton didn't play a lot of the year. Brock Osweiler did. And that offense was atrocious. But people thought he was a really good, really smart, savvy coach, and he got the opportunity to coach, be the head man at Miami. In 3 years there, it was absolute mediocrity, and he ran the team into the dirt, literally. Gase has a history now, ever since he's become a head coach, of not being able to get along with players. There are some players that he seems to take an extreme disliking for, and no one really knows why. Perhaps his personality is that of one in which anytime he has he clashes with another type of personality, it is incredibly volatile. And this happens a lot. There's a lot of people that he ran out of Miami because of his personality and the way that he treated them. So this has been an ongoing issue. Jamal Adams just appears to be the latest case of Gase. And that's the issue here that the Jets have to kind of start reviewing and start looking at is you have a quarterback. You have an unproven franchise quarterback. And that's to say the least about Sam Darnold. I was not a fan of Sam Darnold when he was drafted. I didn't think it was going to be smart for him to start right away. He needed to be put into a good situation where he could sit for a while. That didn't happen. there were things to Darnold's game that showed incredible promise, especially his redshirt freshman year. His redshirt sophomore year was a lot of question marks. And these were the concerns that I raised back during that draft cycle, was the fact that he turned the ball over more than any quarterback in college football that year. On top of that, Darnold played the Ohio State Buckeyes in the Cotton Bowl to end his college career. And it was atrocious. It was the first time he'd really ever seen some defensive NFL schemes. Ohio State had a lot of NFL-level talent. In fact, I think everybody on that team, just about everybody who started that game, is playing in the NFL. They destroyed him. And it was pitiful to watch. So the point that I'm looking to make here about the Jets is unproven franchise quarterback, head coach clearly on the bubble. Now it appears that the Jets are moving people that they're fixing to clean house. It's that simple. They are fixing to clean house. And that's what's going on. It's kind of hard to look at it any other way. This is a big trade for the Seahawks too, by the way, because what have they been looking to do for the last 3-4 years is recreate the Legion of Boom. Remember Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman on the back end of that secondary that was so good. Yeah, that's kind of what they need, that violent, versatile secondary that they used to have. And right now, it's Jamal Adams is definitely an upgrade. Several people have pulled up the depth charts and posted them. You know, just the starters and whatever from the Seahawks, what the Seahawks secondary is going to look like this year. And Jamal Adams makes it that much better. He's going to be playing on his rookie contract this year too, which is big. The Seahawks are going to be contenders. Well, it's not the Legion of Boom that they just put into the back end, but it's a star that they just put into the back end. Someone who can really step up that defense. That's big. That's really big for the Seattle Seahawks. That's what they needed. So it only makes sense that this trade happens. This is Jamal Adams is a perfect fit, first and foremost, in the Seattle Seahawks defense. On top of that, people are going to complain. They're going to say that the Seahawks paid too much. Well, perhaps they did. They feel okay with it. You see, the Seahawks, if you think about it, when was the last time they didn't overpay for somebody or overdraft somebody? You know, I want to point at 2012 and point at Russell Wilson. That was the last time. I mean, they've got Russell Wilson on a great deal now, too, because quarterback money has grown, you know, 200% in the last 5 years. And they got him under a contract back when it was still relatively low compared to what it is now. Yeah, Wilson is probably the last time they didn't overdraft somebody or overpay them. But anyways, all right, so let's get into another story here. That's pretty much all you need to know about this trade. I'm sure it'll come up again tomorrow with something, because NFL Network is trying to hype this trade up as it's one of the biggest trades that we've seen in a decade, and I'm sure they're going to have some more content to discuss. But let's get into this story here. So, as you all know, I am a follower, I'm so much a follower, really more of a supporter of Outkick the Coverage and Clay Travis. The Daily Beast published yesterday on Sunday a hit piece on the website in an attempt to construe it as a website spreading all sorts of false misinformations and taking on incredible people, which is very funny. The article was your typical liberal blathering about social justice virtues and coronavirus flaws and whatever the terms are now. I can't keep up with them at all. Robert Silverman is the guy who wrote this piece. And let me just say this about this piece. It's bad. I mean, like, I'm not talking about the content, like what he's talking about and trying the things that he says. That's not all it's that bad. I mean, this article is a mess. Literally, from a standpoint of me looking at this, analyzing it as an editor, I don't know why this got published like this. So, Silverman attempts to take you through a magical roller coaster of information as though that'll make the ride any more enjoyable. His attempt to paint Clay Travis as Alex Jones, the InfoWars alt-right figurehead, falls flat. In fact, Silverman is the guy who in 2017 wrote a piece on Clay Travis while he criticized ESPN for the way they handled Jemele Hill and the SportsCenter at 6, calling him the Alex Jones of sports. So this has been something that's been going on for a while, and Silverman just felt like in this piece he had to reiterate everything that he said about Clay in 2017. But fine, if you think that they're close, I don't think they're close. In fact, I published a piece yesterday saying, showing what you can compare them, how they are at any point comparable. If you've got to reiterate that, okay, fine. But he bounces between topics so much, it's hard to keep up with. Silverman is throwing these big words at you, and it's putting you through, well, here's this guy. Oh, let's go back to Clay. Oh, and then there's this guy. We're going back to this guy, David Chow. And then we're back to Clay. And then all of a sudden, oh, wait, here's a new guy, Jason Whitlock, that we're going to bring up and talk about. Oh, we're back to Clay. He doesn't keep the topic straight. They bounce all over the place. And I guess if you're emotionally invested in anything that he's saying, you can keep up with it. But I'm not at all, in the slightest. The Daily Beast is one of these websites. First off, this is a legitimate question here. Why would you call your website the Daily Beast and be an alt-left website? Are you just trying to, you know, imply that you're run by, you know, beasts or demons for that matter? Anyways, I'm just saying. They ask for a year subscription. If you want to be really nice, they have a $35 option and a $100 option. And that's for a year. That covers your, I guess, unlimited access to their articles for a year. Which is really funny, because on this article, there's a little banner when you enter onto the page on the bottom that says, "We believe that you should have accurate information about coronavirus, and that's why this article is free," which is really funny because that's all Clay Travis puts out is data and facts, accurate data from whatever is provided by the CDC or whoever's whoever's putting out this shit. Okay, so this was one of the worst pieces of journalism I've seen in a while. Strictly from the fact that it was a very poorly designed article. It was not very well thought out with how everything was to be presented. And it probably wasn't well thought out because Clay Travis and OutKick published all the answers to the questions, that the questionnaire that when the Daily Beast reached out to them about this article the day before. So they felt like they had to release it now. So I feel like their article was too rushed. And because of that, he didn't have a clear direction with how he wanted to present the data. He jumps all over the place. What you get is a colossal mess to read. With that being said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to take a break right here. And when we come back, we're going to get into some of the other college football stuff and what that looks like, and continue on going through some of the teams that I promised we would at the end of last week. Next on the John Vogel Show. Welcome back to the John Vogel Show, presented by Anchor, the best place for you to start your podcast. So, gonna throw a little plug here before we get into some of the other stuff. If you haven't already, go check out johnvogel.football. That is my website. It is my portfolio website for the most part. Right now, I am utilizing the blog in it. I've been publishing a lot of content here recently on all sorts of different things. So if you want a good scoop, a good insight, a good take on things, go check that out. Last week, we also published a piece on wide receivers and the three things I'm looking for when I scout them. So not just political, sports, whatever commentary. We have some really good content that's up there as well. So that being said, let's get into some of this college football stuff. So, yes, this is still a point of contention amongst most Americans, talking about college football. Should we have it? Should we have college? Should we open schools next year? Oh my God, everybody's freaking out. All right, we should open schools. So far, there has been no real factor that you can point to and go, yeah, no, that there's no, that it's too dangerous to open schools. We don't have anything like that. Not many people, and when I say not many, it's like a dozen at tops, have died at the college age from coronavirus. In fact, more people are killed daily. College age people are killed daily by automobile accidents than college age kids have died from coronavirus over the entire time it's been a thing the last 4 months. So put that into perspective a little bit. Not many kids are dying from this. Not many kids are hospitalized from this. Their immune systems are strong enough for the most part. Now, if you are a student and you are at risk, you know, follow the CDC guidelines, work, do school from home. You know, don't go to the campus. Totally get it. You know, because the people who are at risk from the coronavirus are people who have existing medical conditions. You know, so if you've got something that's dangerous that weakens you, okay, don't go to campus. That's fine. We get it. But for the majority of people, the 95% of people that go to campus, to go to college, they're fine. And they know it. Anyways, see, that's this is the problem, guys. You can't say that about coronavirus. If you say that, you are this horrible, terrible person. How dare you be so insensitive? No, I'm not being insensitive. I'm looking at the data that you provide me. I'm looking at it going, look at how many people between the ages of 18 and 25 who have died. In fact, no one under the age of 18, from what I understand, the United States has died of coronavirus. The last time I checked. Anyways, it's like, you guys give me this data. What do you expect me to do with it? I'm going to find the positives in it. Because that's what we do in a time of crisis. We look for the positives. We look for the good things. We look for the things to hold on to build hope on. And if you've got something that's proven over 4 months
to not be a, to be a non-factor, then go fucking with it. Anyways, college football looks like it's going to open up. Pac-12, they dropped some schedule details. It looks like that they're going to go to a 10-game format where they play all in conference. So that means one team, there's only one team in the conference they're not going to play. They're going to open up play like September 18th, have two bye weeks sometime in October and November. As of now, the championship game is scheduled for December the 5th. That can be pushed back a week. All right, so positives there. They canceled their out-of-conference games, but they've added an in-conference game because guess what? It's not as bad as they anticipated it being. Who saw that coming? Let's get back into the SEC, though, because there's a few schools that I did want to talk about today. Kind of get back into the West, because we talked about Alabama and LSU last week. Now it's time that we talk about Auburn. Okay, Auburn is kind of that school in the West that everybody looks at and points at and goes, this school's got a chance. They're really good. They can play. They're always competitive, but they can't ever seem to pull it all together. The last time they did, Gus Malzahn, 2013, lost to Florida State in the national championship. And I believe that was still the BCS era. It may have been the last one. In fact, I do believe it was the last one. Okay, so Auburn has a lot of talent this year, again. Their wide receiver core is going to be good. They got Bo Nix coming back. He's a sophomore quarterback. Played all of last year as a true freshman. He is the perfect fit for Malzahn's system. He's got to develop the passing a little bit more. He's going to. He's going to get better. He's going to be vastly better this year. I almost guarantee it. And he's got some real speed on the outside. Okay, so that's what Auburn really likes. They like the physical, big interior offensive lineman across the board, and then they go with, they like to run with power, they like the H-back, but they want their speed on the outside, and they've got it. So this could be one of the better Auburn teams we've seen in a while on offense, especially if Nix takes the leap this year like I anticipate him taking. He's going to be very good. All right, so the defense is going to be pretty good too. It's not as good as last year. Last year you had Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson, and they tore up, you know, they tore it up from the offensive line. You're not really going to have that this year. You're going to have, I mean, you got some promising guys, but there's nobody that's really established at this point. The guy that's the big deal on Auburn right now is KJ Britt, linebacker, number 33. Look out for him. He's very good. In fact, he might be a first-round pick next year, if all goes well. He's brutal. Okay. KJ Britt is one of the better linebackers in all of college football right now. And I've seen some good linebackers this year. There are some really good linebackers. Dylan Moses at Alabama, Nick Bolton at Missouri, just to name a few. And I just named two guys in the SEC. Tells you what I've been studying. There's some really good linebackers, and KJ Britt's right up there with them. Okay, so watch out. He's perfectly, fits perfectly the Seattle mold. I wouldn't be shocked if Seattle tries to get a hold of this guy next year. Would not be shocked in the slightest. Kind of replace him. He's a KJ Wright, you know, type player. So that would just make all the sense in the world to me. All right, so Auburn's going to be competitive. I don't know if they're going to be able to beat LSU. They came very close to beating LSU. In fact, they were closer than pretty much anybody was last year. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that this year. I don't know if they're going to be able to beat Alabama again. I really don't. Okay, but Auburn's going to be very competitive again. Another team you got to bring up is Texas A&M. And there are a lot of people who think A&M is going to win the West this year. And I hate to tell you all this. I'm not going to tell you I told you so, because that's just a dumb take come December. I'm just going to let you eat that on your own. If you want to take responsibility for picking them, go ahead. If not, whatever. But this team is not going to win the West. All right, they've got some good players. They've got a lot of guys that have played together for a long time. In fact, quarterback Kellen Mond and wide receiver Jamon Osborne both went to IMG Academy and played together there. Okay, so back in high school, this is years ago. So they've been playing together for a long time. They both started playing as freshmen for the Aggies. They've had a long time together to build this chemistry. There's several guys on the team that have all been there playing as freshmen that are now seniors. Okay, so I understand the hype. Now, here's the thing. A&M has a lot of fringe NFL talent right now. And when I say fringe, I mean like it's borderline whether these guys are going to be drafted or not. They've got a lot of them too. So overall, it's one of the better teams in the SEC. But you're not going to overcome superior talent. You're not going to win a positional, you know, battle because of these guys, okay? Unless you're playing some of the lower ones. I'm talking about the LSU, the Alabama, the Auburn. A&M, no, it's not happening this year. You've got a good quarterback. You've got a good wide receiver. You lost a couple receivers last year. You got your running backs coming back, and you're going to hope that they take the next leap. It's just, it's not going to happen for them this year, guys. And I'm not trying to be a downer. It's just fact. A&M is not going anywhere. They might be able to beat Auburn. I don't think they got a chance against LSU. I don't think they've got a chance against Bama. And I really doubt that they're going to take down Auburn. So I'm looking at a, you know, assuming that they get their conference games back that they've lost. I don't know if they lost any off the top of my head or not. But assuming they play all 12 games, we're talking about a team that goes 9-3. They're not winning the West, guys. Guys. They're not. It's not happening. Okay? Anyways, that's about all the time we have for today. So we'll continue the SEC tomorrow. We're going to get through the SEC eventually, trust me. We will continue them tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have some news and something else to bring up and talk about because it is Monday and somebody's going to drop a bomb. Somebody's going to do something and we're going to have to talk about it, probably all outraged and, oh my God, what are we going to do? Which is fine. That's what this podcast is for. Anyways, you guys have a great rest of your day. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to follow me, keep up the show at John D.A. Vogel, John DeVogel, across pretty much all platforms. I am available there. Yeah. Anyways, take it easy, guys. Enjoy yourselves. It's Monday. God love y'all. We'll see you tomorrow on the John Vogel Show.